Well, good morning. Thanks for joining us. As Lindsay mentioned, we know sometimes it's hard to walk into a newer place, and we're grateful that you did. If you're joining us online, where's that camera? Also, thanks for joining us, being part of our celebration today. So in our devotional, Darkness Then Light, which we're reading through for Advent, Jonas Sage writes a piece entitled Christmas Tears. And what he does in that is he compares the birth of a child, the tears of the parents they feel at birth, and then how those tears take on different effects throughout life to the impact Jesus' birth had 2,000 years ago. But not just to parents, but to the world. And this morning, I want to talk a bit about the impact of Jesus' birth. So if you got a Bible, if you'd open that to Matthew chapter 2, we're going to start in verse 1, we're going through verse 12, wrestling with this question, what's the impact of Jesus' birth? What is the impact of Jesus' birth? To kind of work that question through, we'll be looking at two sets, if you will, of people. One set is just one person. We'll be looking at Herod, the ruler, Roman ruler in the area, and we'll be looking at Magi, a group of people who sought out the star and sought out Jesus. So let me introduce our passage this way in verses 1 and 2. It says, now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, there's our first player, Magi, second group, if you will, from the east arrived in Jerusalem saying, where is he who's been born king of the Jews? These Magi were scholars, maybe slash astrologers who were following this star. They knew something of Jewish folklore, of Jewish history, if you will. Maybe they weren't scholars in the Bible, but they knew tradition. There's the word I was looking for. So this king of the Jews. We saw a star in the east and have come to worship him. So that sets the stage a little bit, or two players in this passage. So we focus, starting in verse 3, on Herod. When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. Well, why is Herod troubled? He's heard there's another king. He's the Roman ruler in the area. He's politically gifted, but he's got a beef with the Jews because they haven't accepted him. Well, I don't think he understands the Jews don't like being in occupied land, and whoever the ruler is going to be in place, they're not going to like him, but Herod just knows they don't like me, and so there's tension there. It says Herod was troubled in all of Jerusalem with him. Why? Herod was erratic. He was paranoid. History tells us that he suspected his favorite wife. He had multiple wives and two kids of conspiring against him, so he had him killed on the spot. That's a paranoid guy. And this guy can go off. We won't see it in this passage, but we'll see later when he finds out he didn't eliminate Jesus the way he had hoped. He'll order that every baby under two in the area be killed. That's quite a decision. But that's who he is. He's troubled. So when your leader's troubled and he's as erratic as Herod is, the whole place is troubled with him. So Herod wants to find out, where can I find this Jesus? So verse 4, he gathers the chief priests and the scribes, gathering together all the chief priests and scribes of the people. He inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. What's interesting here is Herod doesn't get along with the chief priests and scribes. Remember, they're the leaders of the Jews who don't accept him. But here he's calling them together because he's desperate to find out the location of this new king. So they answer in verse 5, they said to him, in Bethlehem of Judea, for this is what was written by the prophet. And you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means least among the leaders of Judah. For out of you shall come forth a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. And that's from Micah 5:2. Micah was a prophet who lived hundreds of years before Jesus was born, and under the guidance of the Spirit of God wrote these words. And what's interesting here is Judah's a backwater. I'm sorry, Bethlehem's a backwater. It's not a place you'd go if you want to kick off a campaign, if you want a person of prominence, you don't bring them out of Bethlehem. But this was an act of God, and God is not limited by human tradition. He says, we're going to pulled my ruler out of Bethlehem. I can raise up who I'll raise up, no matter where they're from, where they're born. Verses 7 and 8, then Herod secretly called the Magi and determined from them the exact time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search carefully for the child. And when you found him, report to me so that I too may come and worship him. Yeah, that's a lie. He has no plan to worship Jesus. He wants to eliminate Jesus. No, you mean, why not just call out the army and go after him? Well, I think people speculate getting the army going would stir up concern among the people, and Mary and Joseph might take off. So he hatches this plan that he's going to find where Jesus is born and then have him killed, eliminate him. Why is he doing this? Because he's threatened. He's the ruler, and there's a new king, and he doesn't like the new king. He likes his autonomy. And we can shake our fingers at Herod. But I'd suggest to you, we're not any different. We have autonomy in our life. We like self-rule. And as Jesus said in Genesis, he gives us dominion over the earth, but we have our authority under him. We have authority as he delegates it to us. And we have trouble when that authority gets challenged. So as a sophomore in college, I was part of the dorm council in Aston Hall. And I want to tell you, I was a fine council member. I represented the second floor on Aston Hall. Every other Sunday, we went to a meeting. And we made decisions like this. What day are we going to have the Aston party? We did one a semester. After we pick a date, well, where are we going to have it? Well, there's about three places outside of College Station. You could do it. Then this is the age when the drinking age was 18, so you had to decide, where are you going to get your beer? There's about two or three places. And how much are we going to charge? Then we do that second semester, too. Now, second semester, we also had to plan Aston Week. There were four floors on Aston. We compete the four floors against you. So what week are we going to do that? What events are we going to have? What days are we going to do it? These are the decisions we made, and they were huge decisions. Well, along the way, we decided we've got some autonomy here. We've got some authority here. You know what? We want to change visiting hours in the dorm. This is the days it was all boys and all girls in the dorm. And so Sunday through Thursday night, by 10 p.m., all the girls had to be out. Friday and Saturday, it was 1:30 in the morning. We thought, you know what? We just want weekend visiting hours. You know, Friday, Saturday, people can be in as long as we want. So we passed a petition. We passed motion like we do. And we went and we presented it. I didn't, but somebody did. President of the council presented it to the head of housing. We were in a complex of four dorms. And you know what the head of housing said? Nope, not doing that. Wait a minute. We went through all these processes, and we got the vote, and we got the this, and we got the that, and here's our petition. Nope, not doing it. Well, we didn't like that. But what he was saying is there's a limit to your authority. You have the authority I give, but when I say no, that's it. Case closed. And maybe that's okay when it happens to some college kids, but when it happens in our life, well, we don't like that. And the more authority we get, the less we like somebody telling us what to do. And if anybody was prone to pushing back on God, it was the kings and rulers of the earth, because they run a country, don't you know? They have this many people. They have this side of an army. And kings and rulers throughout the years have decided to come against God, and maybe they could eliminate him, and maybe they could get rid of the people. And here's what God says when they try and do that. The kings of the earth take their stand, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointing, saying, this is Psalm 2:2-4, by the way. They decide, we're going to get rid of them. They decide, let us tear their fetters apart and cast away their cords from us. We're going to get rid of God and his people. That's their decision. How does God respond to that? Does he freak out in the heavens? Nope. That's what it says. He, God, sits in the heavens and laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. You think you got plans? Just like the head of the dorm housing said on our dorm council petition. Nope. That's how God plays in the heavens. These kings, they're going to decide. And Herod's coming face to face with that, and he didn't like it. What's the impact of Jesus' birth? Here's what I say. Jesus' birth threatens our kingship. It threatens our rule over our life. America, we're the land of the what? It's free. No one tells us to do it, right? She said, I do. There's a second group of people that help us understand the impact of Jesus' birth, and that's the Magi. Verse 9, after hearing the king, they went their way, and the star, which they had seen in the east, went on before them until it came and stood over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. What's the joy? Well, I think, again, in our devotional, Scott James writes a passage called Night Skies and Dark Paths. He talks about camping at night. And they're in a tent, and you get out, and you see the beautiful moon, but it's obscured by the forest. There's trees, there's stuff through it. So you see it in part, but he talked about making his way through the forest to the clearing when all that stuff was gone, and then, oh, man. It really is brilliant, isn't it? That's what these Magi are seeing, and that's a picture of what we're seeing when Jesus shows up. We've known God for 1,500 years before Jesus was born through the writings of the prophets and through the spoken words of kings and priests, and that's recorded for us, and that gives us a view through the trees and through the forest. But with Jesus, we step into the clearing, and we see the beauty, the nobleness of his character. We see one who would die for us come to die. Here's what it says, verse 11. After coming into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell on the ground and worshipped him. They opened their treasures. They presented to him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. These guys end up following Jesus? I don't know. We don't know anything about it after this. Go off the scene. But they're delighted to see God. They're seekers of God, and all of a sudden, God has been put in terms they can understand. He's right there in front of them in human form. See, we ask this question, what's the impact of Jesus' birth? Jesus' birth, it does threaten our kingship, but it delights seekers of God. It delights seekers of God. It brings God face to face. You ever seen video or pictures from autograph day with the Husker football team or the Husker volleyball team, Husker basketball team? What goes on? These boys and girls who have seen their favorite player, Emmett Johnson, Andy Jackson, whoever, they've seen them on TV, and they've seen them on the internet, and they've seen pictures. Now we're going to meet them face to face. And they couldn't be more thrilled when they stand face to face with Andy Jackson, and she interacts with him a little bit, and she signs an autograph, and the kid walks away thrilled with this keepsake, I met my favorite player face to face. You understand? That's what happened at Christmas. We knew God from a distance, but all of a sudden he came face to face. Where my illustration breaks down, it's not a 30-second, it's not a 60-second meeting, it's not you walk away with an autograph. You come to faith in Jesus, he sets up his kingdom in your heart. It's not an experience you had long ago. It's a day by day, moment by moment. He who was distant is now personal, setting up his life in your life. Well, the Magi, they've seen Jesus, and they're going to go back. Remember, their mission is to go back to Herod and tell him, because he wants to come worship. Verse 12, and having been warned by God in a dream not to return to Herod, the Magi left their own country by another way. That's a pretty big risk. You're ticking off the ruler. I don't know where these guys fell with God, but they're responsive to God. You want me to go another way? I'll go another way. You know, that reminds us, Jesus makes God, he brings them to us, but you know, most of us want God on our terms. I want God this, that, and the other. That's not how Jesus rolls. If we're going to follow God, we got to follow on Christ's terms. terms. But if we will, he'll take us right to the Father. And what was infinite and incomprehensible will become manageable, will become knowable, will become understandable for us. So a couple years into working with some friends with Campus Crusade, I was on staff at the University of Northern Colorado, I decided to start in seminary. So I got my first paper. It's got to be 12 to 15 pages. And I thought, man, it's been a while since I've typed. It's going to be hard to type this thing out. And this couple said, have you heard of a word processor? No, I haven't heard of that. Well, you can do it on our word processor. Well, I don't know. That sounds pretty high tech to me. And see, I was used to when you type something out. Remember those of you typed, you remember whiteout? You remember having whiteout? You got to do it. So you make a mistake, you got to put whiteout. This is what they told me that got me. You won't need to bring your whiteout to this thing. Seriously, I'm going to be able to do this without a whiteout. So there I was, and I had my thing written out, and I'm going to type it in. But the whole thing was confusing to me. It's this new thing. And I could tell you lots of things that confused me, but really got to me was, remember the arrow key where you can move your cursor over, but you don't change spaces? I'd get that confused with the backspace key. I'd want to do that, and then I'd want to move forward, and I want to move forward, arrow, and then I'm hitting the space bar. And so I have either Ken or Sandy right next to me going, no, you don't want to do it. Let's click, 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 let's go back. And they talked me through the amazing, complicated word processor. Hey, God's infinite, all right? We're finite. There's multifaceted, and you hear grace and mercy and all this stuff. Jesus said, I'm going to set up your kingdom, my kingdom, right in your heart. I'm going to walk you through this thing. I'm going to lead you to it. I'm going to convict you of sin when I need to. I'm going to encourage you. I'm going to show you grace. I'm going to show you mercy. But I'm going to be right beside you, walking you through that process. That's why people who seek God are delighted when he shows up. So what's your response to this king who's come near? Is that a threat? It was a threat to Herod. It's been a threat to a lot of people throughout history. I mean, God's not letting you hide. He's here. And the degree to which we want to hold on to our own autonomy, call our own shots, yeah, man, Jesus is a threat. But if we're people who want to know God, who want to understand God, Jesus came to put God on our terms. You know, the Magi traveled a long way to worship Jesus. I want to tell you, Jesus traveled infinitely farther for you and for me. The Magi came with gifts of frankincense, myrrh, and gold, which was significant. Jesus came with an even greater gift, his life, so we could live and know him. What's your response to Jesus this Christmas? Okay, give you a scenario. You ready for it? You're where you are and you see a police officer start approaching. How do you feel about that? Well, it depends on your circumstances, right? If you're one of those persons who's kind of taken the law into your own hands, maybe you've driven a little fast, or maybe you're walking someplace, or you're someplace you're not supposed to be. Well, I mean, you're not so glad to see the police officer, right? But let me take you back like 400 years ago when we don't have cell phones. My son asked me these the other day, Dad, what did you do when you guys didn't have cell phones? And you're driving on a road and your car breaks down. And you're over there in the side and a police officer shows up. How you feel now about the police officer being there? Well, I'm really glad he's here. I'm really glad she's here. It has not so much to do with the police officer. It has to do with the condition of your heart. Where are you this Christmas? Are you fighting with God? Or are you saying, God, I need you? Jesus came. His birth, it either threatens our kingship, but delights people who seek God.